Basically, it's corn flakes, a gallon of milk, and a sack of spuds.
Alaskans feel the pinch of the national recession. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 25th of March. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Skagway braces for far fewer cruise ship visitors this summer.
You should see Broadway right now. There are still 7 retail stores available on Broadway.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo goes the distance for the Iditarod, an event that brings people together in the spirit of Alaska's heritage. Wells Fargo, the next stage.
Low-income Alaskans can look for a little more help paying for their fuel under a bill that passed the state Senate today. The measure adds an additional $9 million to the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, effective as soon as the House passes it and Governor Sarah Palin signs it. Democrat Donnie Olson of Nome said the measure was first put together to address the needs of rural Alaska, but it was expanded to help people all across the state, and he says they still need it.
This winter has been an unusually cold winter, and because of that, it has devastated many of the savings that those people out there, those people that I represent that are out there just trying to make it through the winter. Sure, here in Juneau, it may be a lot warmer. The days are getting longer, but in the higher latitudes, it's still cold.
A family of four has to earn less than $59,750 a year to participate, and Finance Co-Chair Bert Stedman said the special appropriation was important to people who faced unusual conditions this past year.
When we look backwards here into last summer, when we had the fuel shipments into Western Alaska, and shortly thereafter the oil price came down and the ice moved in, and it put Western Alaska in a very peculiar position, where they were locked in to these high fuel prices, and then we went into a cold winter.
The bill passed with no opposition and will next be up for consideration in the House. A lot has been said and written on the governor's decision not to accept nearly a third of the federal economic stimulus funds for which the state qualifies. Now the legislature wants to hear from the public. The chance comes tomorrow at 1:30 when the House Finance Committee opens the phone lines statewide. Co-chair Mike Hawker says the hearing recognizes the governor's willingness to reconsider the decision after listening to the public.
We've broken the stimulus into two bills. One, we're dealing with the transportation components, which we held public testimony yesterday. This will be on all other components, both those that the governor has recommended and those that are available to be brought back into that bill by legislative decision.
Access to the hearing will be available from legislative offices and through the legislative information offices statewide. Despite the gloom of the global recession, springtime means a natural growth in seasonal employment, especially in Alaska. The number of jobs increase in industries like seafood processing, tourism, and construction. But with the recession creeping north, seasonal growth is likely to be slower than usual. In fact, the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development is forecasting a loss of 700 jobs over the course of the year. Some economists predict twice that many. Folks who lose their jobs generally qualify for unemployment benefits. KTOO's Rebecca Shear has the story.
If you're visiting the Juneau Job Center.
Juneau Job Center, the sign says.
And you want to grab people's attention.
Where people and jobs connect.
Here's a tip.
Here we are.
Ring the cowbell.
Oh my gosh, everyone came running out of their offices.
Yeah, that's what happens because it's the sign that someone got a job.
This is Merlin Stoddard.
Everybody calls me Skip.
And he would love nothing more than to give that cowbell a ring. Stoddard lost his job in October when the Kensington mine laid off half of its 82 workers to reduce costs.
It was heartbreaking because I had a kid in college. I had a new house. My wife had a new car because we felt our jobs were secure and everything was good.
Since then, life's been dramatically different for Stoddard and his family.
The one kid that was in college, he can't keep going to school. The kids up north, I co-signed with them on a pickup, for example. They've had to survive on their own.
There's no Christmas for my grandkids. I have no retirement set aside anymore. Basically, it's corn flakes, a gallon of milk, and a sack of spuds.
Stoddard and his wife are living off her salary from Wells Fargo Bank and his unemployment checks. He gets $370 a week, the maximum a person can get in Alaska, a result of legislation that went into effect January 1st.
The old maximum was $248 a week. That amount was stagnant for about 10 years, and it changed this year.
Another change this year, says Bill Kramer, chief of unemployment insurance for the state labor department, involves the federal economic stimulus package.
Congress has authorized an extra $25 per week if an individual is eligible for unemployment.
Kramer expects those payments to begin next month. But in the meantime, other changes are afoot with Alaska's unemployment benefits. For instance, the duration. See, traditionally,
if someone earned the maximum duration, they would be entitled to 26 weeks. And then in Alaska, we are right now triggered on to one of the federal extension programs. It's called regular extended benefits.
And it entitles a person to an additional 13 weeks. Once that's exhausted, there's something called emergency unemployment compensation. Then there's a second tier of emergency compensation. So all told,
I guess I need to do the math. I think we come up with about 72 weeks.
At the time of this report, the state labor department counts 26,164 active unemployment claims. The number includes people within and outside of the state. And that's why Alaska's unemployment figures can actually be a bit misleading, or so says state labor department economist Dan Robinson.
So in 2002, the nation is in recession. We're adding jobs, but our unemployment rate is also rising. We think it's because we had fewer Alaskans leaving the state to look for work down south and more people from the lower 48 coming to Alaska to look for work.
A more accurate indicator of economic health, Robinson says,
is what's happening with our payroll employment. And so far, it's holding up okay, but we do think it'll start to fall because this national recession is big enough that it'll affect our markets and the jobs in Alaska.
Payroll jobs did increase in February due to the seasonality of Alaska's economy, but growth slowed to less than 1% over the last 12 months and continues to shrink. Still, back at the Juneau Job Center, Skip Stoddard isn't giving up hope. Do you have any resumes out now?
Out? Oh, absolutely. I have several with the city of Murrow and several out to the mining companies. Some of them, they wrote back and said that they're going to hang on to.
In the meantime, Stoddard's worked some temporary gigs here and there, but he's ready to return to full-time employment. And when he does, he'll no doubt report for duty bright and early with, dare I say it, bells on. In Juneau, I'm Rebecca Shear.
Princess Cruises confirmed last week their plans to pull one of its cruise ships from Alaska during the 2010 summer season. The absence of the Star Princess means Skagway will lose an estimated 48,000 visitors next year. From member station KHNS, John Hunt reports.
Skagway tourism operators had already begun preparing for a downturn in 2010. Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines announced plans to reposition its vessel, the Serenade of the Seas, next year. Skagway Tourism Director Buckwheat Donahue says that means a total reduction of 91,000 potential visitors next year.
A visitor spends between, a cruiser spends between $120 and $150 a day in Skagway. Or in Haines, actually. I mean, because some of those figures reflect Haines tour operators as well.
And that means a possible loss of between $11 million and $13,650,000 for Skagway and Haines tour operators. Portions of those dollars also add to the revenues of the municipal governments. Donahue said the decision by both cruise lines was based on the economy.
Anticipating a downturn this year as far as capacity is concerned. And so this just reflects that, you know, that the competition worldwide, the downturn in economics, right, it's affecting all of us and it's affecting the cruise industry.
Many of the cruise lines have offered lower prices to fill berths. As the number of unsold berths has risen, Donahue says the cruise companies are beginning to look at consolidating the full fare passengers and redeploying vessels to other areas of the world. Despite the expected downturn for 2010, Donahue said some of the local responses to the news have been positive.
Some people are saying, okay, maybe we'll get rid of some diamond stores, some jewelry stores, right? And some people are taking it as good news.
For the first time in years, the historic district of Skagway has a number of prominent storefronts that sit empty.
You should see Broadway right now. There are still 7 retail stores available on Broadway. So that's a sign of the times, too. It's already taken its toll.
The cruise industry is diversifying, building more ships and bigger ships. But the list of destinations is also becoming more varied. Donahue says competition from other ports around the world, along with the worldwide economy, will likely be the prime motivators in the industry. Reporting in Haines, I'm John Hunt.
The Alaska Volcano Observatory has lowered the alert level for Mount Readout from red to orange. The volcano exploded twice this morning, but both produced much smaller plumes of ash than previous activity. Stephanie Prejean with the AVO says since then, the volcano's rumblings have quieted down.
That does not mean that we're not in an eruption. So, you know, if we do see increased activity or a sign that we're going to see some other big ash plumes, we'll go back up to red.
Prejean says that during the last eruption of Mount Readout 20 years ago, there were similar lulls in activity.
We don't know how much magma's down there that's going to come out. And so this could be temporary, or it's also possible this eruption is not going to be as large as 89 or 90. We just have to see how the next few weeks and months play out.
Scientists still haven't seen the volcano's summit crater. They are waiting for a break in the clouds to send a flight out to get a close-up look at the lava dome. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Chicaloon says goodbye to an influential elder.
She was someone that people would go to for advice. She could just wrap you up in a big grandma hug and make you feel better.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the new AT&T, your world delivered, and by STEMS Floral Artistry and Gifts for Giving. STEMS in Anchorage at 563-3366.
After months of wait and years of work, the U.S. House has passed a huge public lands package that includes a land swap in the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge. It now goes to President Obama for his expected signature. The legislation could increase the size of the Eisenbeck and Alaska Peninsula wildlife refuges by more than 61,000 acres, in exchange for a swath of 206 acres wanted by the village of King Cove. They hope to build a gravel road through designated wilderness to reach the all-weather airport in nearby Cold Bay. Community members say it's necessary for safety, but environmentalists say the road will harm unique wetlands and waterfowl. The road is not yet a done deal. Today's bill leaves it up to the Interior Secretary. Salazar said today he's not yet ready to weigh in on the land swap.
You know, I've not looked at the specific language of that bill. I know it was one of the areas of conflict, but I think, we can't let the perfect be the enemy of what is already a very spectacular bill. And, we'll look at the specifics of the particular road that's in controversy, but I have not done that yet.
The proposed land swap has the support of Alaska's congressional delegation, all of whom voted for the big public lands package. The overall legislation has the backing of environmentalists, despite their concerns about the Eisenbeck land swap, because the legislation protects 2 million acres of public lands and thousands of miles of rivers across the country. A group of concerned citizens and environmentalists have recently finished outlining a plan they say will help protect Alaska from future oil spills. The group just finished a conference in Valdez, where they met with the Regional Citizens Advisory Council. RCAC's success preventing oil pollution at the Alyeska Pipeline Terminal has inspired this new effort to extend similar citizen oversight to the rest of the 800-mile pipeline. From KCHU in Valdez, Joshua Smith reports.
Everyone admits it's not going to be easy, like Richard Feinberg, former state government advisor and journalist. He's one of a dozen people at the center of an ambitious new grassroots campaign.
Are we clear that we're going for federal legislation to try to set this up, that that's the game plan?
The idea is to convince Congress that oil companies in Alaska need to pay for citizen oversight of their pipeline infrastructure, like making sure rusty valves don't leak and corroded pipes don't break. Valdez citizen Dan Lawn says this prevention is worth more than any response.
You talk about picking it up. You've got a dream, you can pick it up. You've got a state and federal requirement, you pick it up. But guess what? You're not going to pick it up. You need to put your emphasis on prevention. You need to put your emphasis in state and federal regulation, in prevention.
After the Exxon spill, prevention did become a priority. For instance, the government pressured Big Oil to pay for RCAC, a nonprofit established to monitor and assess the environmental practices of the Alyeska pipeline terminal. But Kristen Smith with the Copper River Watershed Project says they're not waiting for another disaster to get the same kind of oversight on the rest of the pipeline. Now the question becomes how to convince others.
We talked a lot about complacency and the fact that it's a known phenomenon, and the fact that if you don't have an event, say, every couple of years or every 10 years, that kind of wakes people up again and says, yes, this still could happen. We have not. You know, earthquakes will still happen. There will still be issues. And so we can't just say we've figured out all the problems.
Smith and others realize that their campaign will have to have massive support to win in the U.S. Congress. But they think they have a strong chance. With the success of the RCAC citizen oversight model and Alaska's waters at stake, Smith hopes others will join their cause and give them the push they need. Joshua Smith.
Citing the highest rate in the nation for birth defects, tribal leaders, rural Alaska community health advocates, and the Alaska Community Action on Toxics, or ACAT, recently delivered a letter to Governor Sarah Palin urging her to address the problem by backing public policy changes that go beyond early detection. The letter requests Palin support legislation that would work at preventing exposure to toxic chemicals. ACAT Director Pam Miller says there is growing scientific evidence linking toxins to birth defects.
The rate of birth defects in Alaska is twice that of rates in the U.S. as a whole. And Alaska Native infants, in particular, are more likely than other infants to have a high birth defect rates. And in fact, in Alaska, Alaska Native infants have twice the risk as white infants, with a 10% number of Alaska Native infants affected versus 4% of white infants. So this is an outrageous environmental injustice, and the state is doing nothing to address this issue.
The letter also asks the governor to enact regulations that prevent the release of toxic chemicals from industry and military facilities, phase out the use of hazardous pesticides at hospitals and parks, and promote the U.S. ratification of the Stockholm Convention on Persistent Organic pollutants. The groups also want the governor to work toward ensuring Alaska Native villages have appropriate waste management facilities.
Women who live near certain particularly hazardous open dump sites in rural Alaska are vulnerable to adverse birth outcomes, and fetal and neonatal deaths and birth defects associated with these open dump sites.
Miller says the State Department of Health's study last summer was particularly alarming because the high rates in Alaska cannot be explained by the usual risk factors, such as cigarettes and alcohol.
So there are environmental factors at work. We know that many chemicals can cause reproductive health problems, birth defects, and other very serious health problems, and these are preventable causes of harm. Therefore, I think it really does present a moral obligation for us to take action so that we can prevent these problems from happening.
Calls to Palin administration staff did not yield any comments on the letter.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and by the University of Alaska College Savings Plan, helping you reach educational savings goals. Save in Alaska, study anywhere. Information at 1-888-4-ALASKA. This message sponsored by the UA College Savings Plan.
Alaska Pacific University program skiers had strong results in the first race of the U.S. Cross Country Ski National Championships last night in Fairbanks. APU's James Southam of Anchorage won the men's 10-kilometer classic race by 8 seconds. He's gained confidence heading into next year's Olympics.
I'm feeling pretty good about my position on the team. I mean, nothing's ever for sure, but I'm feeling pretty good. And so it's more, you know, looking forward to performing really well at the games rather than trying to make them and then hold on and have some good performances there.
In the women's 5-kilometer race, Christina Strandberg, a part-time Anchorage resident from Sweden, blew away the field by 31 seconds. But because she isn't a U.S. citizen, the national title went to Morgan Smith of the U.S. ski team and second to APU's Becca Rorabaugh of Fairbanks. Rorabaugh says she didn't expect to place so well.
There weren't like a whole ton of people telling me where I was. My start was kind of early, so there wasn't a whole lot they could tell me. And so I was just kind of, you know, trying to do my thing, I guess, like gain a little bit on the people in front of me. But it seemed like a solid, like, striding course. I thought that I was a little tired double pulling. I maybe needed to have better tempo or something, but I felt pretty good striding. But I didn't think it was like a super duper duper awesome race. I was pretty surprised afterwards, for sure, when I heard.
Rorabaugh says it's by far her best result in a national championship race, following an 11th place in January in Anchorage. She says she's starting to think about the possibility of making the Olympic team. Former Alaska Governor Wally Hickel is taking on a new role: film promoter. Hickel's Institute of the North today released a short film aimed at attracting Alaska's young people to an old philosophy, the common ownership of the state's resources. APRN's Ellen Lockyer has more.
My great-grandfather and his generation.
That's actress Koryanka Kilcher narrating. 19-year-old Kilcher joined old-timers Hickel, Clem Tillian, Vic Fisher, and Byron Malott on narrating duties on the 28-minute film highlighting the Alaska Constitution's promise of citizen ownership of natural resources. The film, titled You Own Alaska, was funded by John Hendrickson, vice president of the board of directors of the Institute of the North. In his opening remarks, Hickel expressed dismay at current state leadership.
But we have challenges at our doorstep. In March 2009, over the past several years, some of those in elected office have betrayed the public trust and violated the integrity of public service. We must pull together, and that's why we made this film.
Hickel states that Article 8 of the Alaska Constitution gives state residents the power to determine how the state's resource wealth is used.
Like the gas line. They said, oh, you can't take it to Valdez. You got to take it here. You got to take it here. We should decide where it's going to go. We should ship it to Valdez and then have the world market. And, you know, not just see to it that it gets a little bit in California, a little bit there, a little bit there. We have to take our resources and understand and make the decision ourselves. And you have to do that through a political system.
The content of the film encourages young people to get involved in resource issues facing the state. And although the film highlights some of the proposed Alaska natural gas line projects, film director Marla Williams says the video is not meant to take a political stance on any one project. For her part, Kilcher says her generation is increasingly aware of their role in a fast-changing world.
Youth are like really raising up and raising the bar on environmental and human rights abuses and everything. And they're really raising the bar and taking charge and owning responsibility for the decisions being made today.
You Own Alaska screens in Anchorage this evening at 7 at the Anchorage Museum of History and Art. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Friends and colleagues are remembering fisheries biologist and former University of Alaska professor Nick Hughes of Fairbanks, who died last week at age 47. Hughes, who had been struggling with depression, committed suicide. He was the son of renowned writers Ted Hughes and Sylvia Plath. Plath, who suffered from and sometimes wrote about mental illness, killed herself in 1963 when her son was a baby. Nick Hughes attended Cambridge University but spent much of his adult life in Alaska, where he specialized in fish ecology and behavior. Fairbanks friend and colleague Mark Whipfley says Hughes was passionate about his work.
He was an internationally known and respected mathematical ecologist. He really was mathematically minded, quantitatively minded, and tried to apply some of the mathematical models to describe fish and fish behavior and fish foraging ecology.
Hughes resigned from the university a few years ago, but remained active as a researcher, most recently teaming with Whipfley and others on a grant-funded study of Chinook salmon on the Chena River. Whipfley says Hughes loved being out on the water.
You know, I guess the thing that really struck me is how inquisitive he was. He really loved everything about nature, and he couldn't take it in enough. He always wanted more. It's just this passion for learning and experiencing nature and being out on the river. His enthusiasm and his drive was really infectious.
Whiffley says Hughes rarely spoke of the past and his famous parents. He says friends knew Hughes was battling depression, but had no indication how desperate his situation had become. Nick Hughes is survived by a sister, Frida, who lives in England. A small private memorial gathering is being planned for Nick Hughes in Fairbanks, and a UAF scholarship fund is being established in his memory. Chickaloon tribal elder and clan grandmother Catherine Wade passed away last Sunday. She was 86. Catherine was born at Old Man Lake near Chickaloon, and she and her late husband raised their family on 40 acres of land near Moose Creek in the Matsu Valley. Chickaloon Tribal Chief Gary Harrison says she was an important figure in Native and non-Native communities. She encompassed the finer points of an important elder, equal parts cultural icon and political activist.
She was the one who revitalized our language, our culture. She started our school. And she backed us up on our sovereignty. She went to jail with us when we went for fishing rights.
Wade was the last natural fluent speaker of the regional Chickaloon dialect of Atna Athabascan, learning it from her grandparents. She started the Yani Da'a School to help perpetuate the culture, and Chief Harrison's son Daniel is one of the younger generation of Chickaloon members who now speaks the language well. Granddaughter Lisa Wade says her grandmother Katie taught her some of her earliest and most important life lessons.
Whatever difficulties that I went through, I knew that I could draw on some strength that she gave me. And I think she did that for not only just her family, but I think she tried to do that for her entire tribe. She was someone that people would go to for advice. She could just wrap you up in a big grandma hug and make you feel better.
Wade hosted Memorial Day powwows on her lawn for the past 14 years. She is survived by numerous children, grand and great-grandchildren. A visitation will be held at Kell's Mortuary in Palmer from 2:30 to 5 p.m. on Saturday. A potlatch will be held at the Yani Da'a School on Sunday, beginning at 4 p.m. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Rebecca Shear in Juneau, John Hunt in Haines, Joshua Smith in Valdez, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., Dave Donaldson from Juneau, and Ellen Lockyer from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Support for APRN coverage of Iditarod 2009 comes from Spinard Builders, supplying Devo paints, adding color and life to your home. The University of Alaska Fairbanks now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF Fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.